welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I don't think anyone listening to this program needs to be reminded what today is. It's the 13th anniversary of 9/11, and I wrote an article I got out yesterday. It's circulating more today. I called it 9/11, the mother of all big lies. Indeed it is. Well, Elizabeth Woodworth is my guest today. And Elizabeth, I'm probably not going to introduce you properly in terms of explaining what you do, so I'll let you correct me. But I think of you as the point person with two dozen other distinguished individuals collecting best evidence, consensus 9/11 information to reveal important truths. Sometimes I like calling them big truths to dispel official big lies. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you very much, Stephen. It's nice to be on again.
Oh, it's important. And, of course, today is a very appropriate day to have you on. And, indeed, there is new consensus 9/11 information. Explain to listeners very briefly what the initiative is really all about in the first place.
Certainly. About 3 years ago, Dr. David Ray Griffin, who's written 10 books about 9/11, I guess he's considered to be the world scholar, you know, the premier scholar.
He sure is.
Yes. He and I decided that we would use a very rigorous medical model to examine the evidence that exists against the official story of 9/11. So we used the same model that they use for creating consensus statements in medicine, where they'll have a panel of people that are all interested in the same thing, say, childhood earache, a panel of child ear specialists. And these people will get together, maybe 15 of them, and they'll do a draft of some statement about the state of the art, and they'll circulate that out to the 15 people who, all blind to one another, revise this draft as they see best fit on the state of the art and on treatment and diagnosis and treatment. And then they'll return their feedback to the central place. And in our case, the central place is David Griffin and myself, who coordinate the 9/11 consensus panel. And this feedback is refined and sent back out again to the panel three times until you get a kind of consensus up around 80 to 90 to even 100% on the evidence. And when this process is finished, it takes months for each consensus point that we do. It takes months to go through that process, but then you've got like 20 people all agreeing, and they're experts. You know, they're most of them have PhDs, or they're engineers, physicists, lawyers. We've got a medical doctor, a psychologist. So we have a whole spectrum of people that are engaged in this process. And so what we end up with, we call the best evidence. That's what medicine says. This is the best evidence we have to date on this particular issue. So this is we now have developed 44 consensus points over this three-year period, and they're available at our website called consensus911.org. It's very easy to find. And on that website, you can see the panel members. On the left sidebar, you can see the panel members. You can see the honorary members. We've got some really world-class honorary members there. The most famous judge in Italy who tried the Aldo Moro case, Ferdinando Imposimato, he's one of our honorary members. And so is the longest-sitting member of the British House of Commons, Michael Meacher. And Lynn Margulis was until her death a couple of years ago. And you can see the list if you go there. So that's who we are.
It's a very important initiative, Elizabeth. There is no question that exposing the 9/11 big lie, I can't imagine anything more important than that, because of everything that's happened in the post-9/11 era, all of the imperial wars that were waged, the war on terrorism, it's really a war of terrorism against ordinary people, and of course Obama's latest speech last night,
yeah.
I call it escalating Middle East aggression. That's what it
yes.
open-ended Middle East aggression. The ISIS or ISIL or the Islamic State, as they call themselves,
yes.
That's the pretext. What most people don't know is America arms, trains, funds, and directs the Islamic State. They train their fighters in Jordan. They ship them into Syria to fight the Syrian government. Maybe Obama is bombing them in Iraq because he wants to support its stooge government, but it very much has a regime change plan in Syria. It simply doesn't tolerate an independent government, even though 89% of the Syrians voted for Assad in a June presidential election. Elizabeth, that independent monitors judged open, free, and fair, and I trust them. Independent monitors from different countries came in. 89% of Syrians voted for Assad for president. They simply won't tolerate anybody else leading them, and Obama insists he goes, and America has the right to decide who will rule Syria. So I believe his campaign in Syria, Elizabeth, will really not be a campaign against the Islamic State, but a campaign against Assad helping the Islamic State, because America is directly involved in recruiting these people, training them, and shipping them into Syria to fight the Assad government. But you'll never hear any explanation about that in the mainstream. You sure will in this program and in the articles I write. But again, it's all appropriate with this being a 9/11 day, Elizabeth. And again, the horrible crimes of war and against humanity, genocidal crimes, or you could call them high crimes against peace. They simply go on without end, and Obama, when he was running for president, portrayed himself as a peace candidate, some peace candidate. We haven't had a moment of peace throughout his entire tenure.
No, that's a really good summary. I really like what you said about Syria there. And, you know, Assad, they never allow him on U.S. television, because if they did... the story that he's a devil, you know, a demon, would be completely eradicated immediately.
Yes.
He's a medical doctor. He trained in London, England. He's an absolute gentleman and a scholar. The way he has great composure. He's quiet and moderate in his speech. He's married to a woman who's a lovely woman who's received prizes for humanitarianism in Europe. I mean, this just is completely inconsistent with the demon that they've manufactured without letting us see him.
That's exactly right, Elizabeth. If I could reach him, and I honestly don't know how to do it, he would be a welcome guest on this program. I have quoted lots of what he said from some of his speeches, from some of his comments. I mean, they really are very well thought out, and they're accurate. And if I didn't agree with what he said, I would say so.
Certainly you would. I know you would. Yes. Well, this 9/11 day, we have four new consensus points, and it's quite interesting now what we've just discovered, something new, and that is the black boxes. This is very timely because of the Malaysian aircraft that have been disappearing and, you know, the black boxes disappearing, which I should start by saying these black boxes are carried in the tail of the aircraft. There's a data recorder, a flight data recorder, and a cockpit voice recorder, and they're virtually indestructible. And in all the time of aviation, there haven't been more than a few dozen that have never been found. And most of these have been over the deep ocean. One was up high in the Andes, where they couldn't find the black box. And the black box sends out a signal, a kind of a pinging signal. So with that background, it seems rather extraordinary that in the World Trade Center, there should have been four black boxes from the two aircraft. And they couldn't. The official story is that there were no black boxes found. I mean, they found all the human DNA that they needed to identify the passengers and the people who were killed. But they say that there were no black boxes. So we're presenting evidence that there were black boxes. And there were two firemen, actually a fireman and a volunteer, working at Ground Zero in October, and they claim to have found three of the four black boxes. But more interesting than that is that two senior executives have reported that just in passing, that, yes, those black boxes were found. And one of them was the state emergency director. Now, the most of the 9/11 stories were coming out of the emergency office in New York City under Mayor Giuliani. But the state director, who was further removed from the sort of the center of information that was coming out about 9/11, just mentioned that, and it's online, you can see his name and I think his name, I can't just recall it right now, but you can read the story about how he mentioned that the black boxes were heard in late September, pinging. And another man that ran an electronics company that they used the electronics from his company to communicate with the black boxes, he mentioned in passing, of course, our company found the pinging for the black boxes in the Twin Towers. So you get these statements coming out, and the official story is saying, we didn't have any. Now, why would they say that? You've got to ask, why would they say there were no black boxes? Because those boxes had all the information that they needed to know what happened, exactly what happened to those planes from the very outset. And the other thing about plane information is I understand that Rolls-Royce engines in planes have a transmitting frequency where they a data transmission frequency where they transmit everything, same sort of thing, but while it's in progress, they transmit this information to Rolls-Royce computers. So those Rolls-Royce computers, nobody ever talks about this, but I expected some kind of an order not for Rolls-Royce not to speak about this because these Malaysian two planes, they would be able also to tell the story about those.
Well, I didn't know that about Rolls-Royce, Elizabeth, and you would think that it would make sense to have a system that you could have black boxes on the one hand, but on the other hand, you could have a system set up so that the information throughout an entire flight or whenever information is transmitted to a black box automatically is transmitted to a location off-site, so it simply wouldn't matter whether you find the black boxes or not. You've got all the information. It's already been transmitted. It's like having a backup hard drive or something. You've got it all.
A cloud drive, yeah. Well, I can imagine why Rolls-Royce would want that, because if there was a plane crash, they'd want to know if it had something to do with their engines, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, all these things don't get into the public domain. They're behind the scenes, and we get the Hollywood, the sensationalism, and it's really coming out of the woodwork today.
Oh, it is. It is. On the one hand, they commemorate the victims. They don't. They don't explain who really is responsible for those victims. And of course, the big lies just repeat over and over again. The mythology of 9/11. The big lies. Call them anything you want. And the official truth, the big truth, keeps getting suppressed. It's pretty disgusting. It was disgusting from day one, Elizabeth. But certainly, 13 years later, it is really disgusting.
It really is, and I did see your blog yesterday on the mother lie, and I've always used that phrase myself in my own mind, because this mother lie that at some level we've all accepted it to live with, a lot of us, about 40 to 50% of us really don't believe it, but we go about our daily lives and kind of, people kind of laugh about it. Yeah, we know that 9/11 wasn't real, but they live their lives out in that context. And then when other lying happens all around them from their own politicians more locally, they just shrug and say, oh, well, you can expect that because of inside is this other lie that kind of is a platform to introduce more lies on top of because nobody really objected to the first one.
Well, that's right. That's right, Elizabeth. And what disturbs me about what's going on right now is, on the one hand, polls show that Americans, in some, especially Afghanistan, overwhelmingly want that war ended and basically want America's wars ended. But other polls show that most Americans, I don't know what the percentage is, I'm going to have to look it up, but I think it's a pretty high percentage. Most Americans support Obama's initiative in fighting the Islamic State. Of course, these same people have no idea what really is going on, and the idea isn't so much to fight the Islamic State. The idea is to control Iraqi oil. It's to control the Middle East. It's to wage war on Syria. It's to replace independent governments. It's all these other things that most Americans have no idea about because the mainstream media liars simply won't explain it properly. So the war on ISIS or ISIL or the Islamic State is really a ruse.
It is. It's a smokescreen.
Yes, exactly.
And with all the other diversions that are going on, you know, all the interest in celebrities and like if a dog gets lost in the woods in Canada, that's a CBC national story for three weeks. It's just crazy that we our attention is fixed on things that we seem people are kind of forgiving and they you know they're kind of dupable, I guess, that they'll follow along the news, these crazy news stories that really amount to nothing. Well, Rome is burning. And I don't know, although it is true that only 33 or 35% of Americans and Canadians are now watching television.
Television news?
Yeah, television news, that's right. So an awful lot is going on through the social media. And it's really, I use Twitter every day for the consensus panel. And people are really the informed part of our public is out is over there on Twitter, reading what people are like. Anything that happens that's broadcast on the mainstream news, say in the Ukraine, there'll be people right there on the spot who are tweeting what they see. So these tweets, you can tweet anybody you want to in the world. You can tweet CNN. You can tweet the Queen if you want to. Those tweets, you make a tweet, and those tweets just get picked up. It's like a stone falling in a lake, and it just ripples outward instantly. So it's kind of interesting to watch and see that the mainstream is still conducting its rather ridiculous antics, and the rest of the people that are in the social media are just laughing about it.
Elizabeth, I must say I'm very lucky. I have a good friend in Caracas, Venezuela, who's also very computer savvy, and he handles my Twitter and Facebook pages and comments and so on. And, I mean, I just get deluged in the comments that come at me, and because of my writing and media work, I don't have the time to answer these people because I wouldn't be able to do any writing and media work. I mean, hundreds of people just tweeting me this comment or that comment or making a comment on Facebook. And I mean, I really love this. And my friend in Caracas maintains the page, and once in a while he'll send me something of importance, and I'll make a comment, and he'll circulate it. But basically, he's handling all of this for me. But again, I feel terrible that I simply can't keep up with the volume that comes at me.
Well, you're very lucky to have all that interest, and that's proof that you're doing a really good job of what you do.
Well, I think a lot of people follow what I write and my media work and so on, and it's wonderful to see the comments that come. I'm very, very supportive, and my Facebook friends and the people who follow me on Twitter, it's pretty voluminous, Elizabeth. To me, it really astounds me. But it's there, and I guess it keeps growing every day. I get so many emails. Somebody tagged you on Facebook or did this or did that, and they just keep coming at me But again, I have no time to answer this stuff because I have to relinquish everything else.
Sure, no, but that's very gratifying. It lets you know you're hitting the nail on the head. I should go on a little bit more with this. Our new consensus point.
Yes.
A former consensus point showed that there is a way to for pilots. They have a hijack code. If somebody's trying to break into the cockpit,
yes,
you use 7500. They just dial that in. It's just like four numbers you hit. And none of the eight pilots squawked the hijack code, which is the odds against that are really high. And we have just discovered that there is no way for, like, the radar signal that goes from the plane the three of the planes were dropped. They just stopped. The FAA people couldn't see them. They just went off the screen, and one was changed. So these are issued by a transponder, and these transponders, they say that the hijackers turned them off so that the plane wouldn't be sending out radar, and then the NORAD, which was charged with intercepting these planes, wouldn't be able to find them. But there's no evidence that they were turned off. You cannot prove if a transponder signal is turned off manually or if there's some kind of electrical power cutoff. There's just no way to prove they were turned off manually. So that claim of the official story that the hijackers turned off the transponders has no proof in reality.
And there's no evidence to prove the alleged hijackers on these planes actually were on these planes.
That's right. There is no proof. There's no actual proof. There's no video proof. There's no cell phone proof that can actually be proved that was alleged. But so all our consensus points, the 44, deal with these different claims and the lack of evidence for them. Now, speaking of NORAD, the man who was in charge of NORAD on 9/11, General Ralph Eberhard, his actions that morning were really strange. They were bewildering. His decisions caused critical delays that led to an utterly failed military response. And the first thing that he did to complicate matters was to arrange all the annual air drills that happen in the United States throughout the year. They were all arranged for the morning of 9/11. So a good part of most of the U.S. Air Force was preoccupied with these air drills. So when the real-life things happened, they were just not available for response. You know, they were all out doing something else. They weren't waiting in their hangars to take off and intercept. So he arranged that, and then when he got informed of the attacks, he was in his office, which was about a 30 or 40 minute drive to the mountain, the place where he needed to take command, Cheyenne Mountain. And he could have taken a helicopter and been there in minutes, but he drove in his car and was absolutely with a cell phone that wasn't working. And Bush's cell phone wasn't working that morning either. Nobody's cell phone was working that morning. So when he was basically out of commission for most of the action. This is the head guy that's supposed to stop this from happening. So we have all these strange, and there were, we looked into the activities of eight of the top military and political command that morning, and those points are all on the website under consensus points. So you can see what everybody was doing, what the cover story was for why they were not reachable. And you just got to wonder how is this what's happening all the time, that they're being paid, they're not never around, you know, all through the year, or was it just that morning?
Well, Elizabeth, all of this is part of the 9/11 myth, with the reality so much different from the official story that we get. But I really urge listeners to go to Google consensus 9/11, and you'll find information on all of the consensus points that have been arrived at so far, and see how the official story just gets taken apart piece by piece. And I think growing numbers of people around the world, Elizabeth, simply don't believe the 9/11 story. But as you say, Americans especially go about their daily lives and they don't realize the harm that has been done to them because of all the things that have happened in the post 9/11 era, and the latest will continue as a result of Obama's speech last night.
Yes, it will, if we take it seriously and don't see behind it, see the truth behind it, and call for transparency. You know, a lot of people are asking now for transparency about 9/11, and the 28 pages from the Joint Commission into 9/11, the joint investigation that happened before the 9/11 Commission report, there are 28 pages that were redacted that have to do with Saudi Arabia funding for 9/11. And there are a whole lot of congressmen right now calling for the release of these 28 pages. It's Congressional Resolution Number 428. You can go to the website and look at it. Ron Paul has come out in support. The 9/11 commissioners themselves, Keenan Hamilton, who ran the 9/11 commission, are saying we never wanted that information to be secret. The American public should be allowed to hear it. And Thomas Massey, a current congressman, has been saying, he just read these 28 pages. He said, I was astounded. My view of history changed as I turned one page after another. It was rewriting history for me. So William Binney, an NSA top fellow, a whistleblower, he and Thomas Drake, who resigned from NSA after the great change in NSA activities following 9/11, he's calling for a new investigation into 9/11. So all this is coming ahead now, finally, 13 years later. There are a lot of people that are known to the public who are saying, come on, let's get on with this. We can't afford to have these lies going on any longer. They're distorting the world, and they're creating horrible conflict between Islam and Christianity, and it's just a mess.
It's a mess. In the wake of the Kennedy assassination, we have the rigged Warren Commission. And in the wake of 9/11, we have the rigged 9/11 Commission. And, I mean, Kennedy, 1963, I mean, there still hasn't been a real investigation to come up with the truth as to what actually happened, as opposed to the big lie about that still is maintained to this day. So with all these decades that have gone by, will we ever see, I don't think I will in my lifetime, Elizabeth, maybe you will, I certainly hope you will, a real investigation into 9/11, and let the truth come out and let the people know. I don't know if it'll happen. If it happens, it won't be anytime soon for sure.
Well, it might happen because there's a lot of pressure right now to resolve big issues like global warming. We've got to get to that, and before we can get to global warming, we have to get the global war on terror off the table. And that's why David Griffin and I have been spending like the last 7 to 10 years trying to remove this obstacle from world progress, from being right in front of our eyes all the time, the global war on terror. It's really a war about who owns the Middle East. And, you know, why don't they just come right out and say, this is what we want. We want to own the Middle East and stop doing these lies.
Well, that's exactly right. And I say all the time, the only threats America has are the ones it invents. And the only terrorism I worry about is state terrorism, Elizabeth. Not the crazies that run around the world, and there are plenty of them. You can give them any name that you want. There are lots of people and groups, names of which and whom people know nothing about, including myself. These people exist, but it's one thing to have retail terrorism that certainly doesn't threaten humanity. It's quite another to have state terrorism that literally puts world peace hanging by a thread.
Absolutely, that's very well said. Have I got time to go a little bit into Mayor Giuliani?
I think we're getting very, very close to the end of the program, Elizabeth, but maybe cover what you can.
Well, the morning of 9/11, Mayor Giuliani and his emergency management team went to a building on Barclay Street, and they set up temporary headquarters there after the Twin Towers were struck. And he talked to ABC's Peter Jennings and said that he had been warned that the World Trade Center was going to collapse. Now, that you can see that online. You can see his interview online. He did not warn anybody that the towers were going to collapse. People have been going after him saying, why did you say that you knew they were going to collapse and not tell anybody so that they'd have time to get out of the buildings? Well, he changed his story when he testified before the 9/11 Commission in 2003, saying that he thought that the building he was in at 75 Barclay Street, which is, you know, not terribly close, he thought that was going to collapse. So a slip of the tongue, right? Well, it wasn't, because it was very clear what he said. He said I was told that the Twin Towers were going to collapse, and a little while later they did come down. So that was a very clear statement. So Giuliani should be hauled up under oath and asked to explain where he got that information from. And other people, the firemen that were present there that day, said that they got the information from the Office of Emergency Management, which Giuliani was the head of. So this really requires some further investigation.
It sure does, Elizabeth, and so much more. I mean, the public needs to know what is going on. And the fact, I mean, this is the most momentous event in the lifetime of everybody living in America, in the world. And people have a right to know exactly what this thing is all about. And the horrors that proceeded in the wake of the 9/11 event, and they haven't stopped. They continue, and they seem to get worse and worse. And I really mean it when I say, very possibly world peace hangs by a thread. It's a very scary thing, especially with what's going on in the U.S. confrontation with Russia, with the world, by far the world's great nuclear superpowers. The idea they would face off against each other and
it's
risk
a
serious confrontation. This is madness.
Gore Vidal called it a war on an abstract noun.
A quick comment, Elizabeth. The music means we're going off the air.
Okay. A war on an abstract noun. That's pretty clever, isn't it? From Gore
Vidal.
Oh,
indeed.